Welcome to another episode of the Gay Bar Archive Show, where we explore gay history one bar at a time. I'm your host, Art Smith, and today we'll be talking to Bev Cook and Alan Collins about their iconic Atlanta bar, Heretic, and some of their other experiences in the Atlanta gay bar scene. So, welcome to the show, Bev and Alan.
Hi.
Hello.
Thanks for having us.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you too. It's been a while.
Yes, it is.
So both of you have a long history with the gay bar scene in Atlanta. And most recently, for the last couple of decades, you've both been involved with the Heretic over on Cheshire Bridge Road, which has become an iconic Atlanta bar. One of the longtime survivors in the Atlanta gay bar market. So, but before we dig into that, let's talk a little bit about the backstory. When I first met Bev, it was the late 80s, and she was working over at Backstreet. Come about.
I was actually singing and playing guitar around town, and I did a couple gigs. At the time I went over there, the bar was closed, except for the upstairs where the pond, the fish pond was.
Right.
And I was singing up there, and Vicky and I became friends. And when she would close at night, I would go down and sit with her, and we would talk. And I was talking to her about my history of being in management. And she said, "Oh, you want to manage this bar?" And I had no clue what I was committing to. And I said, "Sure." I had no clue what the bar business was about. But so I started opening and closing that little room every day for her. And then one day I asked John Vera, I said, would you be interested in reopening the rest of the club? Because John was over there at the time. And he said, yes. And then they reopened it. And I stayed on as manager and learned all about the business from working at that club. It was a great, great learning experience. I couldn't have gone to college for, you know, that. I couldn't have done any better than working there to learn all about the business. So I stayed on for about 3 years, and the staff grew and the staff grew, and I learned and I learned. And when I felt like it was time for me to go, I resigned and went over and decided I wanted my own club. And I kept driving by the sports page and it was empty. And I kept thinking, maybe that's a good spot, you know? And eventually I talked to the owner of the sports page and asked her if I could rent it. And she said yes. So I went in and started remodeling and getting it ready for activities, getting a license and all that.
I remember those days. Now, Backstreet, for the one or two people listening to this program that may not know, Backstreet was the Mac Daddy nightclub of Atlanta gay life after you came in the door. I don't know how many square feet it was, because every report I've seen is different. But 18,000 square feet. It was a three-story club with a massive dance floor, a gigantic disco ball over the dance floor. The third floor that you were talking about, if I remember correctly, it seems like when I first moved to Atlanta, there was also like a brick barbecue pit on that floor, like for grilling out hamburgers or something on the weekends or Sundays.
I don't remember that.
I remember.
I know that there was a fish pond. This was in 87 when I went over there. And they still had the fish pond and the big long bar, and there was one employee working up there at the time. So when I went over there, there was one staff member, and it was basically that they wanted to keep some portion of it open, I'm sure, you know, for
keep
whatever reason.
Current.
Yeah, and it just was kind of like a neighborhood pub kind of feeling.
Yeah, that.
And then
bar,
it went gangbusters. went gangbusters.
It opened in 1975. And stayed open for almost three decades. I closed what on January 1st, 2005, I think it was, at the stroke of midnight. So it had a long run, And of course, after you left there, it became a 24-hour club, which really kind of blew everybody else out of the water. A craziness.
It actually became a 24-hour club when I was still there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have heard that nobody's been able to confirm this, but I seem to remember for some reason. It became a 24-hour nightclub when Weekends was forced to close by the developer who had bought the property there.
And that's right.
And they were allowed to transfer the license to another location within X number of days. So if I remember correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I seem to remember seeing the liquor license at Backstreet once it became 24 hours, Weekends too at Backstreet.
Yeah, Weekends doing business at Backstreet.
Or doing business at Backstreet, yeah. So that was very
cool. That happened. And that was another thing that I was unfamiliar with, a 24-hour club. So I went from one room to 18,000 square feet to, we went to then a 24-hour club. So like I said, the education I received there in the bar business was phenomenal.
Oh, absolutely.
Bears were very knowledgeable and had been in the business forever. And so it was really a perfect fit for me as far as learning the business.
So do you have a diploma on your wall that says, bar management from Vera University?
I should.
We'll see about
getting you. I should. I'm sorry.
So we'll see about getting you on.
Oh, okay.
So, Alan, you've been involved in the gay scene as well for a long time. From what I understand, back in the day, before you got involved with Bev and Heretic, many years earlier, you were involved with one of the iconic Atlanta bar owners that everybody knows and many people love, Dina Collins. She operated The Rose, Dina's One Mo' Time, Hoedown's, Three-Legged Cowboy, and I think she mentioned to me also Uptown, that she was an owner in Uptown. And being Collins, was this nepotism? Are you like her long-lost grandson or something?
So there's so many of us in the community, and maybe we'll go into it later, but there's like five of us. None of us are related, and none of us knew each other beforehand. But, I worked for Dina at Hoedown's when it was down the street here on Cheshire Bridge. And I moved here in December of 92 and started working there sometime in 93.
So that's like 30 years ago. So you must have been about what, two?
12. I was skinny. I was skinny and had hair. That's how long ago it was.
Well, the bar business will do that to you.
Yes, it will. You speak the truth.
If not the patrons, the employees.
Yeah, exactly.
So what was it like working at Hoedown's? What did you gather from that?
I absolutely loved it. I had never really, really bartended in a high volume bar before. When Sheila came, I was there as a patron, and when Sheila came up to me, I had no money. I was broke as hell. And I would go into Hoedown's, and I would get a pitcher of draft beer, just one, and sit there in the corner and listen to the music. And Sheila came up to me and, she's like, "Hey, do you know how to bartend?" I'm like, and I lied. I said, "Yeah, I did." I had bartended a little bit, but nothing crazy. And she gave me her number. She said, "Call me on Monday." And so I started there on happy hours on Monday and Tuesdays. And then something happened and I got promoted or got a night shift and worked there probably for about a year. I absolutely loved it just because I love the music. And, you know, because I've always been into country music and just loved it. And the people, the country crowd they're typically very welcoming, very friendly. And it was just a good place to work.
Yeah, I have fond memories of that place and Dina's One Mo' Time. Mm-hmm. Dina, when I first met her, was probably around the same time that Bev moved to Atlanta. It was the mid-80s, I think. And Dina was just an overwhelming personality. She was She was a character. She was almost a caricature of herself. She was, you know, iconic, that pitch black hair. You know, she was, went out of her way to be the proper Southern mother or grandmother or whatever. You know, that was her public persona, was to be this, you know, this warm and loving bar owner who cared about everybody in the bar.
And you never saw her when she didn't look amazing.
This is true. And she still looks like 87.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just told her age. Uh-oh.
Okay. She'll tell it when I interview her next week. She'll be the same way. She'll be just...
And she is such an incredible person. I mean, she would walk up to... She knew everybody that walked into her bar. Sheila would get mad and make her go home because she wanted to give everybody money that, you know, she was so generous to a fault, really. You know, people would cry about their rent and she'd sneak them money. And Sheila's like, get out of here. I need to make some money. She's so generous. Such a great, great person. The people out there watching that don't know Dina, she was a hoot. She is a hoot. Love her to death.
Well, stay tuned because we'll be posting an interview with Dina in a week or two. So at this time, Bev has now left Backstreet and you have left Hoedowns, and it's the early 90s. Well, late 80s actually, wasn't it? When did you open 2069, Bev?
I think it was 1990.
Okay.
So 91, somewhere around.
I wasn't here yet when she opened 2069. I was still living in Virginia. I didn't move here until December of 92.
So now you were.
Alan and Ray came later after I opened.
Alan is has got the distinction of being one of the Atlanta gay bar people who's apparently never left Cheshire Bridge Road. I think the city council's working on that, but
between the pandemic and the bridge, yeah, it's going to take more than that.
So you mentioned Sports Page, and Sports Page was the predecessor to 2069. You were working at Backstreet while Sports Page was operating, and it was like the ultimate women's gay bar in Atlanta at the time, correct?
That's true. Yes, right.
Did you go there frequently as a patron? Was that one of your favorite bars?
Yes, I did. I went there more. I went there and I went to a bar called Tallulah's.
I
primarily frequented the Sports Page. I also played music there.
Oh, very good.
So and my other connection was the guitar. I did a single act.
I see.
But and you just another kid. Pardon me?
You still do that, don't you?
Yes, but I'm in Ohio right now, so I just do it in Ohio. But a little tidbit, the owner of the Sports Page last name was also Collins.
Betty?
Betty Collins.
Yeah, Alan had mentioned that to me the other day on the phone, and I kind of chuckled because I didn't know that was her last name. I always knew her as BC.
Yeah,
so, Betty Collins. It never occurred to me what her last name was. It was just BC.
And my initials are BC. So here I am stepping into the, not weird.
Which has nothing to do with the year of your age, right? Of your birth. Not you were born.
I wouldn't tell.
So Sports Page is sitting there. You've left Backstreet and you decide you want to spread your own wings and open another bar. And you go to BC and kind of knock on the door and say, hey, Betty, I want to do something here. What do you think about it? And you struck a deal and opened 2069.
Right. It was currently shut down and shuttered.
Ah.
So it had been closed for a minute, maybe a year or two. It was Selections before that briefly, which was a dating game bar. I'm not sure how exactly.
I remember that because at the time, I was publishing my magazine, Ovation, and Mark Jackson from Brushstrokes and I did an event there, a regular night there that we called SOB, which was Sensations, Ovation, and Brushstrokes. And I remember that being in that building. And the only thing I remember about it was some kind of a mailbox dating game where you would wear a number or something and you would write a secret note to somebody else and they would put it on a little screen or announce it on the microphone and say, B22 says C11 is really sexy. And they would, you know, the idea was to meet each other in the bar.
I never went to Selections, but they moved to Selections. They moved to that name and that idea because I don't know what was going on with the sports page. But anyway, it didn't stay open too long. And then they shuttered it and it was totally closed. They just kind of locked the doors and walked away. So when I went over there to open 2069, I used the address just because I didn't really have a name. It was
69 in it.
But yeah, well, that worked too. But it had been closed for a while and syrup was everywhere. And I mean, it was a mess. So I had to get an exterminator in there. And I mean, it was a pretty big cleanup. And then we started putting up partitions and sectioning it off. And then I had a soft opening as 2069. And mostly the lesbians came back, mostly females came back. A few people from Backstreet that I knew that were my customers came over to see me and stuff. But it was 2069 for a year, I think.
Now, did you have to dig into your stereotypical lesbian handyman skills to get that place into shape, or how did that come about?
Well, I actually had a lot of help. Some people from Backstreet Peaches came over and helped me clean up the stools, and Dale Biggers was there helping me build walls and stuff, and just people that were going to be working there. But at the same time, you know, I was trying to generate some revenue. So that's why it was 2069. And then we would work after hours and stuff and do stuff. But when we formally opened as the Heretic, it was like a year later. And I really didn't know what it was going to be honest. I knew it was going to be for guys because Backstreet was predominantly men. And that's kind of what I knew. But it started out one way and then it got kind of sea deep there for a while, and I had to like step back and try to figure out what our direction was going to be. And we ended up with a very diverse club that offers all kinds of different things on different nights. So it basically became a place for country, drag shows, leather, all of it. So, but the community built that bar as far as the clientele. They sort of dictated to me what they wanted just by the things they showed up to, things like that. So I knew that I was just going to let it go, let it take its own direction. And that's what I did. And our employees are amazing. And the clientele has been so loyal and they really kept us afloat. And, you know, they're the reason that me and Alan and Ray have what we have, because I stepped in there with $500. That's what I had on a credit card. No kidding. And an idea. So it can be done, but boy, was it rough. So
fun fact, you mentioned a name from the past, Dale Biggers. And Dale and I were roommates briefly. I had moved to Atlanta with Chris Dillahay. And he and Dale were great friends, and Dale moved in with us over on Beaufort Highway for a while. But he was also involved in somewhat, I'm not going to say early, but the 90s era Atlanta Pride too, wasn't he?
Yes, as I was.
So he was somebody that made a big impact on Atlanta.
Yeah, he actually ran the leather shop for a while at the Heretic when I first opened.
Oh, very cool.
So he was involved at the Heretic briefly too. But he left and went to Hoedown's. Is that right, Adam?
Over the Anvil, yeah. That's when they switched. The Hoedown's I don't know. I guess Hoedown said move to where Transfer was, and they changed that building, the old Hoedowns, to the Anvil. And Dale was managing that.
Now, 2069, or the Heretic, the building itself, you haven't added anything to it, right? It's the same size as it always was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what we've done is basically partitions and to make areas so the flow is good, traffic, you know, it's not one big open spot. But it's between 6,000 and 7,000 square feet, right, Alan?
Yeah, it's just under 7,000 square foot. When Heretic opened, it was very, very much the 80s, 90s look. With, you know, the dance floor was, you know, had walls around it and rooms were sectioned off. Over the years, instead of, you know, we've never remodeled anything major, but we would knock out a wall here and there and open it up. And that really changes the dynamic of the room. You know, you go from an enclosed dance floor and you take out a couple walls and it makes the whole lot bigger and put in some video screens. And we've never done anything structurally to the outside, but we're always painting something or moving something or on the inside.
Now, speaking of outside, you know, you said it's about 7,000 square feet under roof, but you must have almost that much square footage outside. You have a huge patio there, don't you?
Yeah, we have. We actually have two. We have a front patio, which we opened some years back for our infamous Memorial Day beach party, where we trucked in 20 tons of sand into the. It was amazing. I've got the video for that. I'll send it to you. It was so fantastic until my cleaning crew, Ed King, threatened to quit because for probably about a year and a half after that party, he was still cleaning sand out of the bar. It was amazing. I would do it again in a heartbeat.
Now, was that the party where Bev showed up dressed as a mermaid and was out in a little kiddie pool in the front?
I remember a dunking booth.
I did get dunked. We had a foam party too, didn't we, Alan?
Don't get me started with the foam party. Yeah, it was horrible. I mean, it was, well, okay, so for anybody out there listening, if you're thinking about doing a foam party, first of all, don't do it. Second of all, if you do it, please hire a professional, because the way the foam mixture works, it has to be so accurate. If you get it off by just the slightest, the formula off by the slightest bit, you either get too much foam or not enough foam. And it's a bit, we did one inside before we did the floors. So we've done a couple, but never again.
Have you been able to get away with this because Bev is like 1,000 miles away?
And yes.
You can't crack the whip when you.
It's easier to ask forgiveness than permission.
Well, I find we talk frequently.
Yeah.
But I'll see something on Facebook every now and then, and I'll call him and I'll say, "What was that? I saw on Facebook."
And then I tell her how much money she made. She's okay with it.
Well, we've been so fortunate though with our loyal clientele. I can't speak to that enough. They, you know, they have kept the Heretic afloat.
Yeah,
they really have. I mean, their support. I mean, we have clients that started coming to the bar when they were 20 and now they're 50 and they're still coming. So that's a tremendous, I mean, that's, we've been open, what, 30 years, 31 years, it's counting 2069. And we literally grew up together with our clientele.
Yeah. It was a crazy, crazy place. I have so many memories of that place. You mentioned, Bev, that in the early days, it had a little bit of a raunchy appeal to it and had a questionable image. I remember going there numerous times. I think this was before Alan came into the picture, but I remember going there and I think a Wednesday night. Was it Wednesday night?
Are you going to bring up the flashlight?
where
dress code party.
Yeah, and it was like pitch dark in that bar, and there were big, for some reason, now my brain may be playing tricks on me, but I remember like big whiskey barrels around there, oil cans or
oil barrels.
And,
on the dance floor.
And who knows what happening in the random hallways and
exactly.
Yeah, I remember those days.
And
reason for the barrels, though, the reason for the barrels were to occupy space on the dance floor, because it took up space and it made it look a lot fuller than it was with fewer people.
And it gave you that kind of, you know, junkyard macho mm-hmm. image.
Yeah.
When you walked right. in there. It didn't look like a, you know, like a backstreet dance floor. It looked like a.
Yeah, it was more leathery, more leather crowd, you mm-hmm. know, and sort of had a bathhouse feel to it maybe for a minute, you know.
Yes, without showers.
And I remember in those
I used days, to go around with a flashlight, and they used to tease me all the time because it was dark. And I was like, why do men like it so dark, you know? But I listened to my staff. And
really? Bev, you know, isn't it time for you to go home?
Yeah, that's what they would tell me. And I would say, I wonder why they want me to leave.
I remember in those days, just down the street on Cheshire Bridge, kind of close to where Hoedown's was, there used to be a line of police cars on that Wednesday night that would just park in the parking lot and watch to see, you know, who was coming, appeared to be coming out of a bar or whatever at 2-3 mm-hmm. o'clock in the morning. And they would like pull everybody over. It was crazy.
That's terrible.
I mean, of course, back then we know that there were a lot of issues with the police. They had the raid at the Eagle that was later. They had a bunch of kind of subtle abuse of the gay bar-going public, but it is what it is.
Yes, and that's sort of one of the reasons I started the Bar Owners Association when I was at Backstreet, because as a bar manager, I didn't know anybody else that worked in a bar. So like if someone was passing bad bills, I didn't even know the numbers of other bars to call them and tell them. So when we started the Bar Owners Association, BOA, we got to meet once a month with all the bar managers and or owners and discuss things going on with the police, with the city, with the mayor, you know, and with clientele, or if someone got robbed, they could call and say, hey, be careful, this guy does that, this just happened at my place. So I was really glad, because that's when I really felt a part of the community, when we all started getting together and meeting at different clubs. So we got to see each other's clubs. We got to get to know each other personally on a personal level. So when you went to visit, you didn't feel like a stranger. I was just really, because of, you know, the police were targeting gays and, you know, so we really needed that. And I was glad to be a part of that.
Yeah. And I'm glad you did that. I was, I attended quite a few of those meetings.
Yeah. I'm still on Backstreet. That's when we started that.
Yeah. I attended them because I was publishing, you know, gay magazines at the time. And I wanted to know what was going on with the bar owners and to meet the bar owners on their own turf. And that was a godsend. The BOA was just an incredible organization, even though there were, you know, catty remarks and stupid comments about, you know, one bartender bad mouthing another or whatever, one bar owner.
The petty stuff, yeah.
But that was a time, too, when Atlanta was coming into the age of having a lot of gay bar owners. In the past, when you were in the 70s and into the 80s, a lot of the bar owners were not actually gay people. They were businessmen with questionable connections that owned multiple bars. You know, they had one owner had five or six bars here. Another owner had two or three bars there. And it was almost like a weird collection of people who owned the bars. But by the time you got into the 90s, you started seeing people like Bev that would step in, and the person who owned the bar was actually an active member of the community. You had Dina Collins, who owned several bars, who was obviously a lesbian. You had Jill, who was involved with the Tower Lounge and a couple other bars. You had Mark Rainey over at Blake's. You had Paul Hargash over at Burkhart's. You had all these different people that were part of the community. And I think that's one of the reasons that the Bar Owners Association worked, is because you weren't, you know, some kind of executive business owner, but you were a hands-on bar owner.
And it really did benefit. I mean, there was a lot of petty stuff going on, you know, like anything, but we had potential Senate candidates and things coming to the meetings and doing their spiel. We've had the mayor, the chief of police. We had a lot of people there so we could express our concerns. Then I became the liaison to the mayor for the gay community for a few years as well. So that we never had a liaison at the time. So, you know, it was something that was needed because there was a lot of stupid stuff going on with the cops and raids and just ignorant things from people just not understanding us and who we are.
Right. And you did it at that time.
It was critical.
At that time, we didn't have the internet. So you couldn't, you know, go to Facebook and say, oh, I wonder what's happening over at Dina's. Let me look at her Facebook page. There was none.
Right. Right. Well, thank God for the books, you know, the
right
print material that you guys put out, because that was our underground little railway sort of to all the what's happening in the community. But that's the only way we knew, was look at the book. Let's look at an Excedra magazine. Let's look at Uptown. Let's look at whatever, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the Heretic has a really cool image. For people that look at the Heretic's ads or the Facebook page or just the logo, the website, it kind of looks like some kind of version of maybe the eagle. It's got that very masculine look to it, a little bit of whimsy, because the logo, if I'm not mistaken, is a griffin, isn't it?
Yes.
It's a griffin in there. Where did that come from?
That actually came from Dale Biggers. He was in Germany and he came back and saw that and he thought it would be nice. So I had Jeff Black. I don't know if you remember him.
Is he the guy that did the Jeff Tech t-shirts?
That I'm not sure, but he designed our logo and we had to modify it. I asked him to modify it because we didn't want to like steal someone's logo. But it was from a place in Germany. I don't know if it was a club or just something he saw somewhere on a billboard. And so we looked it up and found a griffin and modified it and thought, well, this would be cool. And so we put the split tongue on it and things like that that aren't typical of a griffin.
And has that been there since day one? Is that the original logo?
Yes. Yes, it is.
So it is certainly...
And the Heretic... I'm sorry.
It has certainly withstood the test of time. I mean, there's not a lot of logos that 30 years later still look cool.
31.
Yeah, thank you, Alan. Well, 32 for me then.
Yeah.
Could count 20 to 69, it's 32 years.
Yeah.
But the Heretic means outcast or nonconformist, which I thought was perfect for, you know,
a bar that
a gay club.
To outcast nonconformist.
A gay club, yeah. Then one year we had a party for Halloween and we put a pentagram on the floor with tape, just the seasons of the, I don't know what this theme was, but people got really freaked out by that. So we pulled the tape up, you know, it scared them. So you go from, you know, they felt like it was, because the Heretic is also associated with witchcraft.
Right.
It started in a Catholic church. If you divorced or violated any of the rules of the Catholic Church, you were thrown out and called a heretic. And the definition in Webster's is nonconformist or outcast. And then, of course, there's other definitions as you go down. So it became over the years and over time, it sort of had a witchcraft sort of connotation to it, or something evil.
Well, in that time frame, they had the Blair Witch Project, which was kind of an underground movie that was, you know, very popular kind of cult flick, whatever. And so it was kind of a hot topic back then.
Right. So but it's worked for us. I mean, we're open to anyone. Everyone's welcome at the Heretic. You know, it's really become a nice mix. Wouldn't you say, Alan?
Yeah, no, absolutely. When I first started here, it was the clientele was leather. I mean, it was pretty much similar to the Eagle. But over the years, we've kind of evolved. Well, I'll absolutely call it evolution. We've evolved into what we are today, which I'm not sure I can think of a word that describes exactly what we are. We cater to pretty much every subculture of the community, and or have had events for different types. We're not just one thing. We're not a twink bar. We're not a leather bar. We're not this. We're everything. And I kind of joke with people. I'm like, if you can't find it at the Heretic on any given day, it probably doesn't exist, because we do, you know, Monday nights we do a black drag show. Wednesday nights we do a gamer night. Thursday nights we do country. Friday nights we'll do the DILF party. We'll do a straight gothic party. We just do so many different things, and I think that's one of the things that has ensured or given us the longevity that we've had, because we opened ourselves up to everybody. We're not saying, you know, we're just this and we only want customers that like this. We're, you know, everybody's welcome always. You know exactly what you're going to get when you walk into the Heretic. You're going to get a friendly staff. You're going to get a good drink at a reasonable price, and you're probably going to have fun. So, you know, get ready for it.
Yeah, I haven't been to Atlanta in a few years, but last time I was there, I was at the Heretic several times. And you're right. It was always a different crowd, a different vibe. Some nights were a little bit, you know, darker or more masculine than other nights. But you never really felt intimidated or like you couldn't be in there. You know, sometimes you walk into an Eagle dressed the wrong way, you feel like a complete outcast. I remember, Bev will get a chuckle out of this if she remembers back when she first met me. I was very preppy then. I was extremely, you know, very much into the pressed blue jeans or khaki pants and button-down shirts or golf shirts or whatever. And I came down to visit Tampa once. I'd never heard of this bar called 2606, which was like a leather bar here in Tampa. And somebody told me, yeah, go there on Tuesday. They have a great happy hour and everything. So I walk into the bar, and I'm wearing a pair of pastel-colored, like pink and light blue, Madras shorts and an Izod shirt with white leather moccasins. And I walk into this bar, and everybody in there has like harnesses, and they've got these gigantic like nipple piercings and everything. And here I am, this little blonde boy, kind of walking into the bar in my little gay plaid outfit. So yeah, it's a different experience. But now at places like Heretic, I mean, you do so many different types of events and so many different theme nights that it's just amazing. I mean, you have done a phenomenal job of building a bar that is an amazing addition to the Atlanta nightlife scene. And over the years, I can't even begin to count how many bars have come and gone. I think when you opened that bar, that was kind of the heyday of Atlanta bar scene, if I recall correctly. And there were like 30 plus gay bars in the city of Atlanta. I mean, they were all over the place, probably more than that.
Yeah, it took us a couple years to get our base going and really you know, start seeing the volume and the people coming in and, oh, I like your place and this is so much fun. And but again, the staff, I mean, you're only as good as your staff. That's the way I feel about it. Absolutely. And so I'm blessed. I'm blessed that I could retire, sort of semi-retire when I left. But I was, 61 when I left, and I had been there for 21 years. And I go and fly down and visit when I can. And, you know, so, but I feel so comfortable and so reassured with Ray Collins and Alan Collins there. I don't see anything that I would do differently if I was in the building. And I spent a couple of years with Alan, what I would say, training him or just basically walking him through what I would do if I was in the club. And he's just an amazing, amazing manager. He has so much on his shoulders, and I know how stressful in a bar and running a club is. And I'm glad he's there and isn't burnout yet because he's really talented.
So when you first laid eyes on him, he came into your door and you decided to start talking about working at the Heretic and eventually becoming the general manager of Heretic. Did you look at him and say, hey, he looks like an outcast. We should hire him and put him on top of the pile? Or how did that come about?
Tell him how you got hired, Alan.
So talking about Dina Collins, which we love and adore. But the reason I'm sitting here with you today is because Dina Collins, when I worked for her at Hoedown's, she told me to go on down the road. Those were her exact words. And she let me go. It was a Sunday night. I'll never forget it. I had, you know, only been in Atlanta for about a year and was making good money at Hoedown's, and came down here and got really drunk. And was crying on Ray's shoulder for, you know, all night long, because I was afraid that I was going to have to move back to Virginia because I had gotten fired from Hoedown's. And the next morning, my phone rings, and I was so hungover. And I said, hello, and it was Ray. And he said, can you start tomorrow? And I said, okay. And I started bartending the next day here. And that was a few months, I think, that I was doing that. And then they trained me to do to be a closing manager, and then Bev started training me to do the day stuff. And it was probably closer to, it was over 2 years that you, I mean, it was like every day she would show me something new, and I had no clue about any of this, no clue. And I mean, she taught me everything that I know about this business. And I've learned new things, of course, that have come along since then. But yeah, it was like I would come in every day and learn something from Bev. And then I'd bartend at night. And then, you know, when she felt comfortable that I knew what I was doing and I could handle it, then she gave me the reins and has trusted me to keep it going. And I'm not sure, I can't give you one reason why we've remained successful, because it's so many factors, but it all comes down to our clientele. It comes down to our customers, how we treat our customers, and the feeling people get when they leave. You know, if they left here, had a good time, they're going to want to come back. And we just keep trying to do that over and over. And because we have customers that are, you know, we've been open 31 years. They weren't even born when we opened. And it's crazy because I look at these kids and I'm like, you can't be 21. There's no way. You've got to be, what, 17? And they're like, no, I'm 25. And they get younger and younger, it seems like. But it all comes down to the customers. We have the most loyal customers. And like Bev was saying, that our our customers have grown up with us. And that was what was really challenging for us, because when we opened, when Bev opened, the people that were in their 20, you know, in their 20s, they have grown up and they have gotten married or gotten partners and they don't go out anymore. So it's been so challenging, because all these people that we have gotten used to are not coming out anymore. And we're like, what the hell? What the hell do we do? So that's where I had to figure out how to get the kids and how to, you know, from different communities. And we've figured it out so far.
Well, you also, you know, Bev probably wasn't thinking about this at the time she opened the bar, but you have a very fortunate location, because at the time, over the decades, Cheshire Bridge has been a major corridor for gay activity. The Terra Theater parking lot has had numerous bars.
I wasn't aware of that.
You knew there were, when you worked for Backstreet, wasn't Weekend's Warehouse up there? Levita, Showcase. There was there was a Showcase Cabaret. There was a whole bunch of bars that were located in that complex. The Saint was on Cheshire Bridge Road. Mm-hmm. You had Sweet Gumhead.
What's
the 24-hour bar where Tara is? It was a black 24-hour club.
I don't know.
Okay.
I can't remember.
Club Anytime?
No, it was, I'll think of it.
But there was a whole bunch of activity on the street. And even still to this day, people who are coming from outside of, you know, not that don't live in Midtown, are coming on 85. They get off right there at Cheshire Bridge. Even if they're going to go to Amsley, they pretty much go right by your bar.
And not anymore. The bridge. not since the bridge got burned down.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And it's supposed to reopen by October 31st. It burnt down August of 2021, and it's been closed ever since.
Yeah, I remember seeing the pictures of that. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
So that was a hard thing to navigate too. And then COVID, but we've maintained, so.
Well, fortunately, you had, you know, 27 years of experience at that location before all this tragedy started kind of happening.
Yeah.
So you do all kinds of events throughout the year. You have, you know, as an homage to the sports page, apparently, you even have sports page reunions where those women that went there 40 years ago get to come back to the same exact building that they might have gone to when they were, you know, 18, and experience a sports page reunion right there at the Heritage.
Yeah, Kathy Diebler, I guess she approached Bev, and then Bev got her in touch with me. Kathy Diebler used to be a DJ at the sports page. And where does she live now, Florida or in the mountains? Anyway.
So she goes back and forth.
Yeah.
From Florida to the mountains. The mountains in the summer, I don't know, one or the other, she switches.
So she has a Facebook group, a sports page family Facebook group, is a private group. And they would plan reunions at different, you know, different small things. Well, this, it was probably 10 years ago, I guess, was the first one here at the home of the sports page. And I was exceptionally excited about it. Bev was, of course, and Kathy was, I mean, everybody was so excited because most of the girls had not been into the Heritage or into this building since the day that the sports page closed.
Right.
However many years that was. So we planned the event. It was a Saturday afternoon, and it started, I think, at like 2 o'clock. And when it was the sports page, the girls would enter through the front, the Cheshire Bridge entrance, instead of on the side. So we wanted to set it up where they walked in the same entrance. And I stood just inside the door at a table watching the girls come in. And it was probably one of the best times that I've had here, just watching the girls. They'd walk in and you just see them looking around, going and pointing, going, remember that, you know, this and that, because they had not been in this building since Sports Page had closed. And it was, I think we had 500 lesbians throughout the day here. It was amazing. It was so fantastic.
Yeah.
And Kathy Diebler, if you're watching, we need to do another one.
Somebody should put a plaque on that building, because if I'm not mistaken, unless I'm missing something in my memory banks, that building is the longest continuously operating gay bar in Atlanta. I can't think of another one that's been around longer than that one.
I don't know. Blake's?
No, Blake's moved.
What about Bulldogs?
I don't know. I'll have to look and see when Bulldogs open.
I don't know either.
Blake's was originally located on 10th Street and Piedmont. I mean, Peachtree. It was originally a 10th and Peachtree, kind of diagonally across from Margaret Mitchell House or whatever. But it was a 10th and Peachtree where Jocks and Jill's was later, and a couple other bars moved in. And the same Trammell Crow, the same developer that kind of booted Weekends out of their location across the street from Blake's, also booted Blake's out of their location there. And that's when Blake's moved down to the park. So Blake's has not been in the same location. And at the time when Blake's moved to the park is also the time when Burkhart's opened. Now that might be another contender. What was that bar called before?
Annie Crazy Rays.
Down or something?
Crazy Rays.
No, Crazy Rays is where Mix is.
Oh, that's right. That's right. What was that, Bev?
What was what? I missed the
Burkhart's before it was
Annie Get Your Gun or Annie Oakley's or something like that. It was a different, it wasn't a gay bar, I don't think.
No.
But in any event, it's been there a long, long time as an operating as a
I think the Sports Page was open probably 20 years.
Wow. Yeah, it was pretty well established.
So we're 50 plus years.
Yeah.
As prior to that, it was a seafood fish. It was a restaurant, Molly McGuire.
Molly Malone's Chowder House.
Yeah, okay. And their claim to fame was this really big guy, I can't think of his name, 2-ton Tim or something, coming in to eat. And they had a newspaper article about him eating there, and he was a
25-cent catfish, all you can eat.
Well, I promise I am not going to make any jokes about that building changing from a seafood restaurant to a lesbian bar.
They've all been made.
I know they have. So they just leave them where they are. So in addition to starting the Bev Cook College of Bartending and Management, what is in the future for the Heritage team here? What do we see for Bev and Alan 5 or 10 years down the road?
You mean other than a walker and a wheelchair?
You're talking about yourself, right? Because Bev's going to be running marathons.
Oh, yeah, she is. She the woman doesn't age.
I mean, look at her.
I know. It's insane.
She still looks like she's 29.
So,
well, it's the lighting.
I can't speak for Bev, and we don't know the future. But I do know that we will be here serving the community as long as the community will have us. You know, that's pretty much been our, as long as there's a need for us, we're going to be here. And yeah.
I agree with that. I concur.
Do you think if some of these nasty people at City Hall get their way, that Heretic will relocate, or will that pretty much put an end to it, do you think, if they move you out of Cheshire Bridge?
Well, nobody's going to be here in 10 years.
Right.
Yeah, it'll be probably 10 years when they finally start acquiring property. And that's a decision that Bev and Ray and myself will need to make, because one, to find another location, if we were forced to do so, would be very difficult. Yeah. And then if you find another location, will it really ever be the same bar? Well, you know, you just don't know. So that's a big question mark to that question.
Yeah, it's a tough market there. That place has changed so much. You know, Cheshire Bridge Road was really, in large part, made by gay bars and gay customers. I mean, yeah. There was so much business there that depended on it. I'm going to mention a name that is probably going to make Bev chuckle a little bit, but down the street, you know, if you went to a gay bar in the 80s in Atlanta, you inevitably ended up at Dunkin' Don. Know, before the popularity of Waffle House, or I think even the existence of Waffle House, Dunkin' Don was like where every gay person went after they left the bar, unless they were at Backstreet, because mm-hmm. then you were there till 10 or 11 in the morning, and then you probably went down to Shoney's for their weekend brunch or whatever, their weekend.
Right.
But yeah, it was quite the active strip for gay life back in the 90s.
Well, it was sort of a red light district, you know, because it had the strippers and the gay clubs and the strip clubs and the Saint and the She Club was there, I think, earlier.
Yeah. And I get a kick out of it. I was talking to Alan the other day. I've known Michael Morrison for quite a while. And I was blown away when they remodeled the building there at his Insurrection, Tokyo Valentino now, that at the Piedmont end of Cheshire Bridge Road, and did an incredible job making it look like it belonged on the Vegas Strip or something. It doesn't look like it belongs on Cheshire Bridge. And yet these whiny people who live like a couple blocks away from there in that neighborhood tucked behind it act like, you know, it's an affront to their morality to have this place there. And I'm like, this place was here long before you even thought about living here, let alone exactly. children and pushing them in their stroller in front of the building. And even if you do, that building does not look like anything seedy. It looks like a beautiful boutique. Or, you know, nobody would ever guess that there were sex toys and slings inside that building, but from just looking at it. So I don't know what everybody's up in arms about. And the same is true of the Heretic. The Heretic doesn't have anything untoward about the outside of it. It looks like a proper business, a bar or whatever with a, you know, there's nothing crazy about it. You don't have a giant 12-foot penis in the parking lot this week.
I would say we probably have had, though. I'm kidding.
Well, Pride's coming up, so.
Yeah. I don't know about 12-foot penises, though.
So Pride is coming up. Pride in Atlanta is celebrated in October every year, which is a much, much better time of year than the old late June when we used to, you know, sweat buckets at Piedmont Park for 2 days. What is it going to be like at the Heretic for Pride? How many people come through the door there on a busy weekend like Pride or New Year's Eve or whatever?
A lot of people, but never over capacity. We're going to have we have eight separate events scheduled over the weekend. That's from actually 10 Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, two on Saturday, two on Sunday, one on Monday, two on Monday, actually. It's grown into quite the craziness. It used to be just the events at night, but then when we started the tea dances and stuff on the back patio, those have become very popular. And so now we have two events, one Saturday, one in the afternoon, tea dance, and one at night, and then the tea dance Sunday afternoon and one at night. So it's going to be quite crazy. We've already surpassed ticket sales from this time last year. It's going to be – last year was probably the busiest Pride that we've had, but we're anticipating this year to be even busier because – last year was canceled. Pride was canceled officially.
Right.
So with Pride, actually, this is the first Pride that is happening post-COVID. The entire city is going to be insane. It is.
And I will be there, adding one more to the insanity. So I will definitely come by and see you, Alan. Unfortunately, I will not be in Ohio, so I will not see Bev that weekend. But I'm sure I'll see her again sometime.
She knows how to Zoom now, so we'll Zoom her in.
Yeah. I'm not sure I wanted to open that floodgate, but.
Oh, I'm going to do a little pop-in this year. I'll be there. But I don't know if for pride or not.
It's all good. But y'all have done a great job with the Heretic. It is an amazing space.
Thank you.
Here on Cheshire Bridge. Congratulations on coming up on your, what did you say, 31st anniversary of Heretic. Is that right?
Yep.
At Heretic, yes.
Yeah. And 32nd in the space.
Correct.
That's quite an accomplishment. And we're very glad to have you there. We look forward to seeing the crowds at Atlanta Pride this year, and to seeing me there for another 10 years until they force you out of the space. So good luck.
I don't know. We might outlive them. I don't know.
We might. You never know.
Because that Chester Bridge Road study was done a long time ago. And
I don't understand that concept. Why, you know, I like Cheshire Bridge the way it is.
But me too.
What are they going to do next? Get a little 5 points and put up luxury high-rise condos? And
yeah.
There's several already there on Cheshire Bridge.
Yeah, we have two across the street right now. There's more. Before all the construction, the traffic was horrible. It was bad enough. There was too much traffic. And they've added probably 800 to 1,000 apartments over the past couple of years. And so once the bridge reopens, I can't wait to see how ludicrous the traffic's going to be.
Well, you know, I want to rent a $4,000 a month apartment across from a water processing plant or whatever that is over there.
Mm-hmm.
So. Well, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time to talk about your history in the Atlanta bar business and about, in particular, the Heretic. And we look forward to seeing you during Pride.
And thank you for doing what you're doing. What you're doing is something that's needed, and we appreciate it so much. I know when Bev sent me the message about doing all this, I was like, I don't have time for this, blah, blah. And I really sat down. I'm like, this man is preserving history. That, you know, in 20 years when we're not here anymore, people are going to look and like, oh, I remember the Heretic. And we're going to be so happy we did it. So thank you so much. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That concludes another episode of the Gabe Archive Show. For more information about this episode or to find more episodes, visit GabeArchives.com.